Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I believe art has a special power, and I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. For our international listeners, the podcast will be held mostly in English. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality. Episode 34, recorded May 9, 2021. My guest today is Florian Peters-Messer, passionate collector of contemporary art. Among other projects, Florian also co-curated the exhibition Fuck Your Fear at Van Horn in 2019, and recently, together with Linda Peitz, the exhibition Empört Euch, Time for Outrage at Kunstpalast Düsseldorf. There he also serves on the board of the Friends of the Museum. Hello, Florian. Happy Sunday.
Hello, Daniela. Happy Sunday. Great to talk to you.
Florian, as always, I would like to know a bit more about your background, your growing up, and your first connection with art. How did it happen that you got so fascinated with art, and especially contemporary art?
Well, that's a good question. Of course, I've been thinking about that before our talk, and I don't want to make it too long, maybe, but I'm coming from a small town.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I'm coming from a small town in the Rhineland, from Viersen. And coming from a family which was not really very much dedicated to art. Of course, we went to Italy and France to see museums and cultural events and so forth. But I think the most important impact for me was my art teacher at school. Mm. She studied at Kunstakademie Düsseldorf, was absolutely passionate about contemporary art and brought us to come to know that what was going on at that stage, at that time. More precisely, for example, we went to Documenta 7 in 1983. She brought us to the dance theater of Pina Bausch. Of course, we went to Kunstsammlung Nordrhein-Westfalen. And as she was a scholar from Josef Beuys, she really taught us very much about his art and his practice.
Wow, that's very advanced for an art teacher at a German school, I must say.
Yeah, that's what I'd say too. And yeah, she was a very eccentric person and great, with a long red hair and an impressive personality. And she really brought us to understand what was going on at that time. And not only the Neuen Wilden, but really like art from the US, like Andy Warhol, and especially really the German art, everything what was just around Joseph Beuys. So that was really very advanced, and that I think really founded my interest in contemporary art, really very precisely in contemporary art, because of course, before I was very much interested as well in classical art or in modern art, but she really opened the door to understand that there was going on something which was relevant to society, to politics, and which was an answer to that what was going on in contemporary politics and social surrounding. Uh-huh. So that was really the most important, I think, impression I really had for the first time. And of course, like Documenta in 1983 was super thrilling because it was this huge show with Beuys' intervention, with the oak trees. It was Hans Haacke, Immendorf, Warhol. That was really very, very impressive and was the first impact, really, I think, for me to understand more what was going on in the art scene at that time.
We're talking about your school time in the 80s.
Exactly.
And then you finished school and then you went your own way. There was something ignited in you.
Yes.
But that does not mean necessarily that one then just continues to follow that. So how were your first individual steps as Florian into the world of art?
I think this came when I finished my studies in the late 80s, beginning 90s. I started to work in Berlin. And I think in the mid 80s, it started that I really did not only make pub crawling, but gallery crawling as well. Mm-hmm. And it was then in the late 80s that I came to know the art of Thomas Hirschhorn. And that was, I think, the second important impact for me, really, to get into contact with something which really thrilled me and changed my life, as I always say.
Was Thomas Hirschhorn the first artwork then also that you ever bought?
No, the first artwork I ever bought was Martin Asik, a German artist painting with wax. That was the first artwork I ever bought. And during a later period of time, I think I bought something like 15 pieces of his. And that was really the starting point when I had a bit more the capacities to buy this or that piece of art, that I really started to buy that. But the change came then later when I came to know Thomas Hirschhorn in a Berlin gallery, and that changed my way of looking at art and on political and social issues generally.
If your first artwork was Martin Asik and then you already you bought like 10 or 15 pieces, that is already collecting. You obviously started not only as a buyer, you started as a collector. Was it immediately that you just didn't want to have one thing? How does that come that you started really already with such a big body of work by one artist?
Okay, I think this was a process of something like 4 to 5 years, I'd say. So I didn't buy them just like on the spot. But I always had the impression that I wanted to have more pieces of art of one artist to really fully understand his or her practice and to get into depth of what the artist is thinking, is doing, to understand his or her point of view, how he looks on the world. So that was in the very beginning evident for me. To really fully understand the practice of an artist, it's necessary to get, if it's possible, if you can have the pieces, if you have enough money, to get into depth and to get more pieces in order to really fully understand the complexity of the personality of the artist.
Okay, you said you met Thomas Hirschhorn and that completely changed everything for you. What was it exactly that was the change, and what was it you learned from confronting the artist and his work?
I remember it was the Bernstein Zimmer, which is now in the Falkenberg collection in Hamburg. And I saw this work and I didn't understand a thing. I was deeply shocked, disturbed, and really alienated, I think that's the right word, because I didn't understand what was going on there. I was just fully impressed by that, what I was seeing. Something in me said, hey, you don't understand this, but still it's so fascinating. Try to understand and try to get closer to that, what the artist thinks, not only what he intends to say, but how he thinks and why he uses this kind of work, the collage technique, these cheap materials, cardboard and so forth. Why does he use this? And I had problems, big problems in the very beginning to follow his thoughts and to understand what he wanted to transport with his work. Because before I was looking in a very classical way on art, like painting more or less. But this was the starting point that I understood that the technique itself does not matter at all. The most important thing is, what does an artist think? What is his look on the world, on social, political issues, whatever? What does she want to tell us? And then the medium she takes in order to transport her idea doesn't matter. If it's a painting, if it's an installation, if it's a photo, if it's whatever, it does not matter. It took me, I think, a year or so to understand that the crucial point is to understand, what does the artist want to tell us? Is it valid? Does it touch me? And does she really use the instrument, the medium, which really transports his or her idea, his or her thoughts in the right way? And when I understood this, this really made it possible for me to have an open view on his artwork. And then I understood that it's really his anger about that, what is going on in the world, the order of reality, he calls it, that he's so much in anger that he uses this technique in order to transport his idea. And this opened up a capacity, the mental capacity, to look in a very free way on installations, for example, and on video. Because if you're really very much used to, and I think many people are quite used to painting, for example, because it's the medium which is the most familiar one to our way of looking and perceiving things, But if you understand that it's just about the content, the message of the artist, and then that the medium, for example, of installation is the best way of transporting this, then it opens up a big variety of artists like Eric van Lieshout, Jon Bock or so, who are fantastic artists and who use this technique in such a fantastic and splendid way.
But also these artists you just mentioned, it's quite challenging to collect those works because their installations or their leftovers from performances, their videos, they need space. And as a collector in a private home, sometimes they can't be seen. So why do you think it is still necessary that you collect them, that you own them, in contrary to just seeing them in an exhibition? What makes the difference that it becomes yours?
Yeah, of course, it's difficult to collect installations or video as well, which you cannot show and see in your home because I'm not living in a museum, of course. But once you understand that a piece of art is important to myself on the one hand side, but if I understand that it's an important piece for society, for political change, for the understanding of the world, it does not matter if I can show a piece at home or if I can have it around. It is just about to buy it, that it is kept in the world and that it can be shown somewhere in a museum or in a show or whatever. So it's kind of, how can I say, I feel responsible sometimes, not always, but I feel responsible that pieces of art are kept somewhere in order to be shown sometime, maybe later, maybe years after I bought them, in order to get in contact with people. Because art is made not only for the private collection or for the private space, but it's made to get in contact, into conversation with the public. And if I do not buy a piece of art, which is maybe very difficult, which is which is maybe challenging, which is disturbing, if I don't buy it, what will happen to these pieces of art? Sometimes they will not be shown anymore in the life of the artist. And I think that's a pity. So I see myself as a collector in the responsibility to keep these pieces of art for the public in order to show them.
Oh, that's interesting, because that is not so much the aspect of like, it's mine, I own it.
No.
It's more the aspect of, first of all, helping the artists and the gallerists and all of that. I mean, this is also probably important that you help them to keep going, to develop more work, but also to preserve something for the public, for society.
Yes. Yeah, I can give you a good example, maybe, that you understand my point of view. It was the Berlin Biennial somewhere in the beginning of the 2000s. I don't know exactly the year. And Eric van Lieshout showed there the video Rotterdam Rostock. It was shown in an outside space in a container, which was made for a building site or so. So like a container, and you could get into the container and see the film. This film is, I think, a major work of his, because he's making a bicycle tour from Rotterdam to Rostock and is filming the documentation about this travel. And he interviews homeless people, just German people from the Sauerland, from wherever in Germany. It's a documentation about his impressions, how he perceived Germany and Germans, and what he learned about Germany and the Germans. I was so impressed by this film that I thought, hey, this film is so important, like the Bader-Meinhof-Zyklus by Gerhard Richter. This film must be kept and must be shown to the public because it is so important. The problem was it was shown in a container. So I called the gallerist. It was Stella Lohaus at that time in Antwerp. My favorite gallerist anyway, because she was a fantastic person and had a fantastic program. And I called her and said, hey, Stella, you know, this film, this installation is so wonderful. It's so important. It's great. But I do really collect strange stuff and difficult stuff. But, you know, I won't buy a container from a building site. This is just too much. Would there be a possibility, please, to talk to the artist if there is not another possibility to install it somehow, somewhere in an inside space? And then she said, yes, I can talk to Eric, no problem. And so he proposed another way of presenting it. It can be presented in a huge box with a table inside. like a beer tisch from Oktoberfest. And there the film is placed. And I bought it, and now I'm happy that this film can be shown and can be given to the public back again, because I think, I'm sure, I'm convinced, if this film was only to be shown in a container, nobody would have had the possibility to experience his art, this piece of art. Mm-hmm. And now we've shown this film, funny enough also, this installation is part of the collection of Kunstpalast as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We've shown it in our exhibition last year at Kunstpalast. And although it's almost 20 years old or 15 years, something like that, it is so actual, it's so contemporary, it is so important.
Yes,
that
yes.
What he learned about Germany and the Germans is still of a big, big relevance today. If you talk about fascism, mm-hmm. if you talk about anti-Semitism and so forth. So I'm happy to have this piece too in my collection, because I know it was the right decision to keep it and to show it to people, that people are able to see something in the flow of time as well, how things have changed or do not have changed, like in this case.
Mm-hmm. And so is it then also important to have for you to have a personal relationship with the artist? Does that change your view on their works, or is that just an extra that happens, for example, if you ask a gallerist or an artist to probably adapt to the work so it can be collected? Or what does that mean for you to have a personal relationship to the artist? Because I know you know a lot of artists personally.
Yes, yes, I do. But for the decision of acquiring a piece of art for my collection, this is not necessary. It's purely about the content. It's about the piece of art itself. If I come to know the artist, of course, it helps very much to have a closer understanding, maybe, or to have a more personal understanding of the piece of art. But generally speaking, I'd say no, it is not important.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important to focus on that, because it's about the art. It's not about the luxury that the collector has, the privileged access to artists, which makes life sexy or interesting or thrilling. No, it's just about the piece of art itself. If you come to know an artist then personally, of course, it's an extra, which is wonderful, because many personalities of the artists are interesting and impressive, of course.
Yes, and it makes life sexy and interesting and thrilling.
Yes, of course.
On top of the art.
On top of the art, yes. But the main point is the piece of art itself.
Mm-hmm. When you look at your collection, do you have like a general idea of the collection and which direction you want to develop it? And do you act more like strategically or intellectually, or is it like a more emotional aspect that draws you into a work? And if you like a work, you just don't think twice if it really would fit into your collection.
Building up a collection, of course, is a process which takes many, many years and many, many different point of views. Mm-hmm. I remember that in the beginning, I bought pieces of art, which I sold in the meantime, because I found out that they would not fit into my collection anymore, because I'm really focusing now quite precisely on political, social, and psychological issues. Mm-hmm. And then if you look through your collection, you see, okay, you have this and that piece of art, which is not really necessary for the content of your collection, mm-hmm. then I decide to sell it or to give it to the museum. Like, for example, all those works by Martin Asik, I donated to the Leipzig Museum, because I thought I really appreciate this artist very much, but he doesn't fit into my collection anymore. And instead of selling these pieces of art, which I really refused myself, I said, okay, I donate these pieces of art to the museum in Leipzig. And I think now they have found the right place. Mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. know, that they didn't have the right place in my collection anymore, but now they have found a good environment where they really fit. Mm-hmm. So I constantly look at my collection and say, hey, does this position really fit into it or not? And the older I get, the more focused I am and say, hey, I want to have pieces of art which are socially, politically, psychologically relevant. And that's why when I go to galleries, when I go to art shows, when I go to exhibitions, whatever, it's this kind of intellectual approach, I must say, which really guides me mostly. But then, of course, the more I'm intellectually interested in an artist or a piece of art, the more emotional I get. Mm-hmm. Because for me, of course, collecting is a very emotional process. But it's the combination of, if I do have a good intellectual approach, and if I see that the idea of the artist really tackles a subject which really fits into my collection, then starts a very emotional process in myself. And then I start chasing, of course, because then I want to have it.
Mm-hmm. Because honestly, I've noticed a certain obsession with you.
Yeah, how come?
I mean, you can only answer for yourself, but you think there is a certain psychological disposition needed to become a quite obsessive collector like you are?
Yes, of course. There must be some kind of neurotic aspect in a collector's personality that drives him or her to do this. I think this can be many aspects. Of course, there are collectors who invest strategically. I don't understand that, honestly speaking, because then it's like an investment. Mm-hmm. But I think there must be kind of neurotic aspect in your personality, yes.
It can be in a positive way, because I think that for you, life is much enriched.
Yes,
by
of course.
Art, and not only because it's beautiful, but also because it's disturbing, or it's heavy, or it's psychologically or politically driven. Mm. So there's so many aspects. And what would you say, how art can enrich humans' life? Because this is also something I'm quite interested in, that art can enrich the life of humans on so many different levels. What is it for you? Because it seems to me art is a very big part of your life.
Yes, it is indeed, fortunately. Yeah, let's say it this way. I studied economics. And I'm running a family business. And I think this is very interesting doing. I have social responsibility for employees and for that what I do, in which kind of way I do invest, in which kind of direction I drive the company, of course. But on the other hand side, I'm surrounded, of course, by a very special kind of people, content, and things like if it's finance, building, or whatever. But this is a very specific thing, which I think is interesting and enriches my life very much intellectually too. But on the other hand side, I'm a very curious person. And so I'm interested in many things which are going on in the world, if it's literature, if it's social, political issues. So if I didn't have the possibility, the opportunity to look at contemporary art, I would feel very poor in life, because I would not understand that many things which are in public discussion at the moment, for example. Mm-hmm. I'm 56 years old now. I would not understand in which direction younger people look at things on political and social issues, on psychological issues, on sexuality, for example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All these aspects are so important for me because I'm curious. It's a pure question of curiosity. And I'm not frightened by being confronted with other opportunities, other views on life, other views on politics or whatever. It enriches me very much. It makes my life very colorful. And of course, it trains my brain to not become lazy, not to become a couch potato, but really to confront myself with really very contemporary political and social issues. Mm-hmm. I would not understand that much about Fridays for Future or Black Lives Matter if I didn't take a close look on contemporary art. I simply would not have this kind of approach and possibility and access.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that in art there's more space for exploring these things, but also to think out of the box, more space for craziness? Or do you think this very, very open field is also a little bit endangered right now by the try to be very correct and right?
I think that two aspects. On one hand side, you have politics, for example, you have social movements. And in this context, art is one player on this map. Mm-hmm. So it is like dance theater, like opera, like theater, like literature. Is that what we see in the art scene? I'd say, a jigsaw puzzle part in what is our society. And as political discussion at the moment is very much focused and it's getting harsher and it's getting less democratic and it's getting more radical on both sides, on the left as on the right side, I think, of course, this will influence art as well, because I think that art is endangered really by this internal censorship, by the fear of cancel culture. Of course, these are all very necessary discussions which are going on now. And we are all concerned by this. If we start really censor our way of thinking, not daring to think into one direction or the other direction, I think then not only our democracy is endangered, but our society and with it art as well. And art is just like one part of society. But if the social development goes into this direction, of course, art is endangered too. But I think the bigger danger is really that our democratic systems, the way of democratic discourse, of discussion, is endangered. That is the bigger issue, I think. But of course, art can contribute very much to it. And of course, the space, the intellectual space and the freedom in art, of course, it's very much bigger than, like, for example, in a political discussion. But especially like in the political context, people have to have a certain education in order to say and to not say special things. And of course, in comparison to that, art has a much wider range and variety and freedom of expressing what can be expressed, maybe not in a political context or a political discussion.
Yeah, and I think this is also really important. So through all these years, I mean, you started very early on with Thomas Hirschhorn, which is already very advanced in a political, in a social way. But through all the years, did you approach towards the art that draws you in? Did that change also in very recent years?
Yes, of course. Yeah, I'm getting more radical, I'd say. The older I get, the more I'm looking on contemporary art and the more I look on that, what is going on politically and socially, the more radical I get on my point of view and on expressing my outrage and my disappointment about that, what is going on in the world. Like, for example, climate change, like, for example, homophobia, everything which is going on in the radicalization on the right hand side. That's what's about anti-Semitism. I think things are getting so bad at the moment. And the older I get and the more I'm looking at contemporary art and the more things do not change and get worse, they do change, but into the wrong direction, the more furious and the more radical I get myself in expressing that what I mean, in expressing that what I feel, in expressing that what I think must be changed.
And this is also expressed then through what you are collecting.
Yes, of course. It's getting more and even more political, more precise, and yeah, more focused, really more focused. And in the way of what I collect, yes, even in a more eccentric and specific and precise way, yes.
You also said that you're interested in psychological art, which probably draws a little bit more on something which we all hold personally inside of us, which is not so much expressed like, for example, a political work of art. What is of special interest to you there?
Oh, it's my personal experience of psychotherapy, because I learned very much in this process. And the more I understand about my own personality and other people's personalities and about socially psychological issues, you find this in art very often, that you find pieces of art who just like express something which touches very much solely a psychological subject. If it's fear, if it's anger, if it's neurosis, if it's psychosis, if it's addiction to drugs, sexuality, or whatever, all this can be expressed in pieces of art. I think it's part of our world as well. And so, yeah, of course, it makes sense that it's part of my collection.
It's a complicated question, but do you think that this personal psychological, like the psychological anger or the psychological inferiority complex or whatever, this can lead also to political expressions then? like that politics can be fired up by psychological issues?
If you see, like, for example, Donald Trump, he is a psychopath and he was making politics in the most catastrophic way.
Yeah.
But I think, yes, how can I say, I'm convinced that the understanding of psychology does, if you really deeply understand what forms a personality and the motivation of doing of people, then of course it's getting political too, because you understand the motivation why men or women do behave in this or that way, or why they decide in this or that way. So I think in any case, to understand more about psychology is a social issue too, because we are not enough trained in our society about psychological topics and issues, which are really important to understand the motivation of politicians and people working in economics, for example.
And also probably the motivation of artists.
And definitely, of course, the motivation of artists, because I think that's why I envy artists so much, because they do have the capacity of sublimation.
Mm.
They can change something in a psychological into a work of art. I am not able to do this. That is really, I envy artists for that capacity, because they can express something in a piece of art, what is going on emotionally, psychologically inside of them.
And you can express this with your collection or by curating exhibitions.
That's what I do indeed, yes. Yes, it's not only curiosity which guides me through life into my collection, but it's of course an expression of that what interests me, what bothers me, what touches me, and what influences me. And so, of course, a collection, I think, in many cases, if it's not a too academic collection or an investment collection, always reflects very much of the personality of the collector.
Yes, this is something which I find also particularly interesting.
Yeah.
And the collections that don't consist of like the so-called standard works of art, which go a little bit more also in the strange, dusty corners. I find that very fascinating.
Right.
So you're obviously learning all the time about art and about yourself and about psychological backgrounds. And did you learn something, especially in the past year during the COVID restrictions, about art and yourself and the collection?
Of course, there are some topics which have been very important during the last 12 months. It's COVID, it's the discussion about Black Lives Matter, it's the discussion about the colonial heritage of Western countries. Mm. So these are subjects, topics, which of course I've drawn my interest too on. So I've been reading very much, for example, on post-colonial things, just like generally speaking, mm-hmm. and not only the newspapers, but really literature dealing with this topic. But I think what I learned personally very much, which is not reflected in my collection, just like regarding this point, is the anger that people have gathered, I'd say, during the COVID pandemic. We are shocked by a dramatic health situation, which is going on at the moment. And we haven't learned substantially enough how to deal with our frustration and how to deal with the anger, which is the result of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is what I personally learned most, that our societies are not well trained, that something frustrating can happen, and that we have to deal with this frustration, and that this frustration leads to really endangering and, I think, very frightening social developments, like those people who are demonstrating against COVID activities, mm-hmm. and so forth, the so-called COVID-Leugner,
mm-hmm.
the COVID deniers. And it's all a question about frustration. And then we're back on psychology.
Yes.
Because if you know that the reaction of those people, these COVID deniers, for example, which is so easily combined with extreme right-wing political actors. If you don't have a look out of a psychological side, you will never understand what's going on there. But that we have the means, the social means through education and understanding, that this anger has its roots in frustration. Frustration about ambiguities, which are very difficult to stand and to endure. Yes. And I think these are all aspects you can only, the social aspects you can only understand if you have a psychological understanding. And I think that is what I learned very much during the last 12 months. I think that our societies do not have this profound, this sound understanding of psychology and about the fear against ambiguities, uncertainty, and frustration.
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. For sure, it can help for an artist to express the anger probably in the artwork, or for you to look at exhibitions and collect works that deal with that. So that can be a kind of anger management. Mm. But the consciousness for that has to be there.
Yes. You know? It's a question of consciousness, absolutely. Because if we don't accept as a society that anger is there and can lead to terrible things, to disastrous things, we cannot only leave this discussion to artists, but we have to carry it into a political discussion, a social discussion, and into our, into everybody's discussion, I must say. Mm. And that's why, of course, an exhibition like Time for Outrage is very important. It was very important. But this discussion is a public discussion and has to be really led in a broad way.
Mm. Yes, I think also it might be just about empowerment, because the great thing about the artists or people that work in a creative field is that they're very self-empowered. Mm. So they just do what they want to do as far as possible, and they don't feel so helpless because they can express themselves, which is like a psychological issue or consciousness issue, that you are able to express yourself in a positive way.
You're completely right. So it's not only the question of sublimation, but really to have an outlet for that, what is going on inside yourself.
Yes, and a constructive outlet. It does not mean that just like act your hate out and kill everybody.
Yeah, you're not punch somebody in the face, but you have a practice. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, they do have a different range of doing this. Like, for example, if you talk to Henrike Naumann, she is so outraged about that, what is going on in Germany, in the right-wing political area.
Yes. And she has profound knowledge about that.
And she has deep and profound knowledge. And you had a wonderful talk with her and Bettina Steinbrügge. Mm-hmm. And there you understand, you hear it in her voice, how angry she is. And she expresses this in her installations in such a fantastic way.
Yes.
And in a very specific way. And I think she's a very good example for an artist who is really transporting this anger and her view on life and society into an artistic practice, which really transports it in the most precise way.
Mm-hmm. So probably anger can be an inspiration for something actually quite constructive. And that is also something I would like to ask you, if there was something that particularly inspired you in the past year.
Ooh, that's difficult to say. The subject which really interested me most, the discussion about the post-colonial heritage. Mm-hmm. Of course, we are maybe a bit educated in this area, but not really well trained. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was shocked that I found out myself about my own education, for example, that in German history lessons, when I went to school, German colonialism was not touched at all.
That's true.
Not at all. And I thought, and now we're discussing this on a very broad level, and I think it's so important to understand that this topic has been neglected in our society, not only in our society, but in other Western societies as well, to such a dramatic extent that really things have to change and things must be changed, and they must be changed now. We cannot wait another 20 years in order to have another look on this part of our history, of the responsibility which is combined with that, which is linked with it directly, and something has to be done. This is one point which really touched me most last year, I'd say. Of course, there are many other topics too, But I must say, this very difficult and sensitive and sensible discussion must be led. That was, I think, for me, the most interesting and the most thrilling and demanding topic I was confronted with during the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm. And is there something you would wish for yourself and but also for, because it's called Voices on Art, so in particular about the art world, something you would wish after COVID and after we've gone through all of this, which will be probably in a couple of months, how we continue?
Yeah, I would be happy if some learnings we apparently had during the last 12 months or 14 months, some learnings should not be forgotten. Mm-hmm. It's about ecology, for example, that now we can live easily with Zoom talks, Zoom meetings. We don't have to travel all the time. We don't have to pollute the world to that extent we have done before. And I think this is, for example, one learning I'd say we should not forget. We should really be aware that we are destroying the environment to an extent which is unbearable and not responsible regarding other generations. And we've seen that the pandemic has a positive impact on nature, on pollution of water, for example, mm-hmm. on the CO2 pollution, because we're just simply not flying that much anymore. I would be glad if some of these learnings would not be forgotten, as, for example, the learning how important human contacts are, how important the personal contact is for our lives, mm-hmm. and that we are not starting again when we can travel and can meet and embrace and whatever, that we take it for granted. Mm. Human contact may be the most profound thing that we never forget, that it can be disturbed, it can be forbidden due to necessities easily. And that we don't forget this, that we have the responsibility for ourselves and for our counterparts, for you, for every person.
Thank you so much, Florian.
Thank you very much, Daniela. It was a great pleasure.
For more information on Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast, follow us on Instagram at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. There you can also leave a comment. Visit our website, van-horn.net. And subscribe to Voices on Art on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice. If you want to, leave us a rating. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.